Welcome to Flipper Talks, a family law podcast. We are Flipper, the Family Law Practitioners Association of Queensland. Family law is a wonderfully rewarding career, but is not without its challenges. Join us as we explore the issues that impact on the practice and well-being of family law practitioners. We hope our episodes will not only inform and inspire you, but encourage you to reach your potential. Enjoy this episode.
Hi, I'm James Bailey. On behalf of the Flipper Board, I have the pleasure to welcome Jennifer Veach of Pilot Partners. So Jennifer, in a nutshell, what's the role of a forensic accountant in family law matters?
Well, James, it's a great opportunity for me to use the word, or the favourite saying, it depends. So it does depend on your instructions and the particular role that you're instructing solicitors, whether it's through a single expert appointment or through a shadow expert or just accounting assistance. The single expert obviously can value the property pool and do a range of bespoke assignments depending on what the parties require. A shadow expert can do, again, a large amount of work if that's required by the parties, whether that's from the outset, assisting with identifying disclosure material, identifying exactly what's in the group structure and what needs to be valued, and also how best to break up some of those assets or do an evaluation of perhaps the cash flows coming out and how you might best deal with those cash flows. There is also the ability, perhaps, if the parties require it, to appoint an auditor or someone with an audit background to do what's known as agreed upon procedures. And that also then allows the parties to do, or one party to do, a more bespoke assignment. Of course, all of these things cost money. And what I will always say as a forensic accountant is whatever I do has to be aligned with the particular case that the family lawyer is running.
Very interesting. An agreed assignment. Can you give me an example of that?
I can, yes. It's it happened just recently in one of our cases. So the particular matter involved perhaps a dispute between the parties not really agreeing what's actually in the financial statements themselves and whether particular amounts were deductible or whether they were personal expenditure. So in that instance, you could appoint somebody who's got an audit background to do an agreed upon procedures assignment, because the other thing that you'll find whenever you're looking at valuations is people think that you're doing a full audit in that report, but a valuation is not an audit. A valuation is a valuation, and if you need something more specific because you're worried about the integrity of the accounts, that might be an instance where you can get an agreed upon procedures assignment going.
Excellent, very interesting. So, how do you identify all the assets and liabilities in a property pool?
Well, this is, I tend to terrorize my team a little bit with group structures and their importance, because what we find with group structures is the group structure may have been prepared by an accountant historically. It may not have been updated. The parties may not understand it. But when you're doing a forensic assignment, what you're looking to do is understand what is the function of all the entities in the group structure, what is there, and then you're using financial statements and tax returns to follow the flow of funds through the asset pool. And that gives you an indication then on which assets are producing income, what are the parties getting out of the particular property pool, where are the liabilities. Those documents are key to figuring out where all the assets and liabilities are. So as a forensic accountant, you're using a combination of accounting principles and investigative techniques to identify where all the assets are so that the parties can make a decision about how best to break it up.
Very interesting. So what common challenges do you see when you're identifying the full pool?
Yes, challenges. One of the big challenges, and I'm sure that you've had many of these sorts of excuses as well, is around the lack of disclosure from the parties. And obviously we've just had a cyclone. One of the potential responses you might get is, you know, it's like the Wizard of Oz and all the documents are up in the tornado or cyclone somewhere. A couple of years ago, we had excuses about, you know, the Brisbane flood, so the papers were floating down the river. Or, you know, cyber attacks. We've been the subject of a cyber attack. We couldn't possibly disclose that information.
Very convenient.
Of course. It's the dog ate my homework excuse some extent as well. So disclosure can be a major component of this. And probably the other part of it is the parties maybe not really understanding what funds they've been living off in the past. So some of that can be quite a difficult thing to communicate. Perhaps it's just been people living off credit, and they don't really understand that maybe the assets they thought they had aren't really there.
Mm.
So
very interesting. What once a pool is identified, how do you help evaluate a proposed settlement or transaction?
So one of the key things I'd say here is it's extremely important that whatever we're doing is aligned with the party's financial planner and their family lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't necessarily, as forensic accountants, you have to make sure you're staying in your lane, you're not giving advice about perhaps which financial assets they should be taking or likely investments or anything like that. It really is the case that once the parties have kind of decided what they're going to take, we can then say, okay, well, this is going to be the accounting consequences and the tax consequences associated with that.
Mm-hmm.
And these are also the documents that you should be asking for if you're going to take on that particular entity, because there's risk if you're taking over an entity regarding the tax history of that particular entity. So it's important that you have appropriate documents in that scenario as well. So we provide that support for our clients.
Mm, very interesting. How do tax factors, tax issues factor into a property settlement?
Tax, yes. There are, I suppose, a lot of different ways that tax can factor into the property settlement. There's obviously perhaps situations where people don't understand the tax consequences of removing funds, such as through from a company and a Division 7A loan situation.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it's a bit of a shock to show them, okay, this is actually what the tax consequences are. But in other instances, there are a lot of opportunities because you also have the CGT matrimonial rollovers and you have duty concessions, provided that you're transferring assets in the right way. You can also at times access things such as the small business CGT concessions and capital losses that might be in the pool. So a thorough examination of the tax consequences and what is available to the parties is essential to get the best outcome for your client, and also to make sure that they're fully informed if there is a tax liability there. Be mindful that the ATO actually has a very sophisticated data matching capability. They've invested a lot over the last couple of years into the Tax Avoidance Task Force and other task forces around the place. If you're transferring assets, they're going to know about it, and they share all of those data matching capabilities with the Queensland Revenue Office and their equivalent in other states and territories. So it's extremely important that you're getting the tax consequences right.
Mm.
And that your documents reflect the transactions and things that are actually occurring.
Mm, mm. And is there situations where sometimes you might not necessarily use, for example, CGT rollover relief and that kind of thing?
Yes. So one of the things I'd say in that instance is you should always consider whether it's worthwhile transferring an asset outside the orders. And the reason that I say that is even when you're looking at financial statements, the assets are always a reflection of the historical cost of those assets.
Mm.
And you think about a property that may have been acquired historically, it may have a very different value in the market right now. And perhaps your client wants to get the benefit of the market uplift in the cost base.
Mm.
Of course, you need to be aware that if you transfer assets outside the orders, there are duty consequences, there are CGT consequences. So you need to make sure that you're evaluating them in both situations.
Mm.
However, there may also be capital losses that are available. There may be, as I alluded to before, small business CGT concessions that you can use as well.
Mm.
And in that situation, it may be worthwhile considering transferring an asset outside the orders to get the best outcome for your client.
Actually crystallise that gain.
That's
instead
right.
Of going ahead and having it rolled over.
Absolutely, because obviously within the, if you're doing it under the CGT matrimonial rollover, the historical cost base is what carries
forward.
That's right.
Very interesting. Going back to that issue that you raised in relation to Division 7A, in circumstances where there is a large Division 7A issue, have you sometimes been briefed on how that could be possibly more effectively managed in terms of dealing with that within the context of a property settlement?
We have. So, and this question also came up in relation to perhaps what would happen if the parties are drawing down on a Division 7A loan to pay their legal fees. So, although that particular situation is not something that we've been briefed on, the situation where people will ask, what are the implications for a Division 7A loan right at this moment, but what is the future liability associated with those loans as well? That is work that we've undertaken for our clients in the past. And it's important to understand that perhaps there's no what we call a distributable surplus in the current year, but that's a test that you need to reevaluate every year going forward while the loan exists. So just because there's no current liability doesn't mean there won't be one in the future.
Very interesting. So can you tell me what's the benefit of involving an accountant early in the process?
So this is a topical issue at the moment. The Tax Practitioners Board has just released their kind of updated legislation in this area. And in 2021, the Chartered Accounting Body also released what's known as a conflict of interest guidance. And one of the examples in that particular guide for chartered accountants was a situation where an existing accountant had a couple who was a client and they were getting divorced. And how do you manage the potential conflicts of interest that may arise? So one of the reasons that I raised this in terms of getting an accountant involved is if the parties have an existing accountant, perhaps that person has a whole heap of the records and that kind of thing, but it's particularly important that maybe one of those clients gets their own independent advice. The reason is not only because of the ethical and professional standards, but it may also be the case that the accountant comes across a situation where they're having to advise perhaps on a negative aspect to the property pool and a positive aspect, and how you don't want to be in that situation where you're having to
conflict.
That's right. So having somebody else come into the situation is also a fresh pair of eyes on the existing pool. And if you're doing the right thing by your clients, you have to remember that they're not your friends. You have an obligation to do the best thing by them, and having somebody else have a look through what's been going on in the past is going to enhance that situation rather than create too many issues, I would say, as well. The other part of getting either a shadow expert involved or some accounting assistance, it really depends, I guess, on the complexity of the property pool. So we won't necessarily take over any compliance work for clients and things like that. What we tend to do is say, okay, how can we help you to get the best outcome in this matter? So it's a bespoke assignment. What's the complexity here? What disclosure material might you need? What exactly needs to be valued in the property pool, and what can really be a reflection, I suppose, of the balance sheet updated for market values? So there's a range of different assignments that you can get a shadow expert or some accounting assistance for your particular client. And given all the compression and the time frames and the difficulty sometimes in complying with those, having somebody that can help you solve your financial problems more quickly is a benefit to your client to get the best outcome for them too.
So I guess in that context, what flows from what you've just said is that sometimes there might be actually an advantage in engaging your shadow expert before your joint expert in terms of making sure that you're briefing the joint expert appropriately. Would that be true?
That's right. And we have had instances where we've assisted our clients in the past. Sometimes it's because there's a very complicated property pool and perhaps a lack of disclosure. So one of the ways that we've been able to help clients is to say, okay, if we're looking at the disclosure to date, what does that tell us about what else is in the pool that might need to be valued? What other questions should you be asking, given the difficulty that you're having at the moment? And that can also help you frame what your instructions or your joint instructions for the single expert are likely to be.
Very interesting. So how do you stay neutral when you're only working with one side?
What I would say here is it's important, regardless of whether you're a single expert or a shadow expert, that you understand your overarching duty is to the court. One of the partners that I've worked with for a long time, he always says, if you're truly independent, then you don't care about the outcome. It's not your money. The clients, again, they're not your friends. you do the best job for them when you advise them in an objective and independent manner, and that you're always saying to them as well, I can help you from a strategic perspective on these particular issues, but you need to understand the full picture here. So the counter argument might be this and this and this.
Mm.
And if I'm questioned about that, that would be my response.
Mm-hmm.
So providing your clients with the full picture is always going to be the best thing to do for them, and remembering that overarching obligation.
Absolutely. So they can understand that while you might present it one way, these are the challenges that could be made to your position or what you've outlined.
Absolutely. And I suppose, like anything in life, it does you no good to stick your head in the sand and just see the positive side of your particular case.
Mm.
It's also important to understand the counter arguments to that.
Absolutely.
It will make you stronger in your overall position if you can understand how your case may be attacked.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you wish lawyers or clients understood more about your work?
I would say that it does still surprise me how many people will say, oh, I didn't realise that you could get involved at this earlier point to help set us up for success, or help us solve the financial problem a bit earlier on in the piece. I think in general, most lawyers are very well aware of the single expert role, but not necessarily that accounting assistance piece. So how can we help you with disclosure material? How can we help you with identifying what's in the pool in the first instance? Because the other thing that we find sometimes as single experts is you might be instructed to value a whole heap of different entities, but some of them might be deregistered, some of them might be corporate trustees, and it's just getting to an answer more quickly for the single expert if we can knock some of those inquiries out before it gets to them.
Mm, makes a lot of sense. Thank you very much for your time today.
James, it's an absolute pleasure and lovely to meet you.
Thank you. To you too.
Thank you for listening to Flipper Talks, a family law podcast. We hope you enjoyed the podcast today. We confirm that the information we discussed today was just that, information for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not specific advice. If something discussed has you considering whether you should take steps, it is important to make sure you get professional advice about your unique situation before you proceed, whether that be legal, financial, accounting, medical, or other advice. Please reach out to Flipper if there's another topic you'd like explored, and if you know someone who might benefit from the show, remember to tell them about it. Thank you for listening.